Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.
Are we live?
Yes, we are.
K. Kanye didn't win.
Oh, bummer.
Bad for the K's.
I know.
By the way, there's no public stocks with a K that do well. You know, it's been a great year for the S's. Spotify, Shopify, Snapchat. Great year for Z, Zillow.
So it's not a K year. So
great
what
year
next
for
year?
F, Farfetch. I can't name one K that does well. And it's hard even in Scrabble with K. It's like kind of not an eight-letter word. It's like a four-letter word. And you never. It's kind of like,
It is a four-letter word.
You get kind of excited with a K, and then it's all the same fucking words. There's very few good things with K. It's a very Norwegian letter.
Yeah, well.
And H. Oh, wait a minute. H is Howard. Hanson Howard. All right. I just walked into that one.
You did.
So you are on Panic with Friends. And by the way, there is no panic. It's crazy. The market just goes up.
There's nothing normal about that.
I told you last week, and you were like, oh, I want to win.
Yeah, whatever.
So you missed it. Big moves.
It's there.
Oh, it's there.
Yeah.
All right. We're day trading in between Takes Hero and Panic with Friends. So today, good guess. Woody Levin. The Woodster. So Woody Levin is a great entrepreneur, good friend, on the board of DraftKings. So we've talked about him on the show before. Has that really fast-growing start. I had about 30 seconds to decide if I could invest because there were like VCs pounding down his door. And he's an LP in our fund. So he actually thinks we're smart.
Huh.
So it's like both sides are covered here.
He didn't just invest out of pity.
To me, I'm happy to talk to him.
Good.
Yeah. Rare.
Is he happy to talk to you? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's in Robinhood through us. So
That's good.
That covers a lot of mistakes when you have a Robinhood.
Yeah, no kidding.
You can be wrong a lot if you have a Robinhood in your portfolio. And so what's interesting about Woody is he's seen losses. We've been in a couple dogs together. So we can talk about that too. Because, you know, fuck, it's my show.
Exactly.
So I'm going to dredge up some old shit for him. Anyways, so he started a company called Hello Extend, which is now, you know, because he's got VC money, he owns extend.com. So we're going to talk about that and what it's like to be inside a fast-growing company. Not inside, he's running the goddamn thing. And we're going to talk crypto because he has a great crypto expo. It's not great. We lost a lot of money, but we can talk about crypto. And then we will talk about maybe DraftKings, just the ups and downs, but we've already gone through that. And whatever he wants to talk about, he's got a little baby boy, he loves hockey, he's got a mohawk.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, his wife lets him have a mohawk.
And a mullet?
Both. M's. Even M's are better than K's. Mohawk, mullet. No, there's no cullet. There's no cohawk. So, that was breaking news for you, right? Kanye did not win.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get Woody on the phone.
Howard, how are you?
Woody Harrelson, welcome.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Was Woody your birth name?
No, it was Woodrow.
Woodrow.
I can't tell you back in the day. And my wife, Gretchen, she makes fun of me for this because, you know, I introduced myself to her when we were joking around trying to role play, which she really doesn't role play. It's playing by myself about it.
I role play. It's just me.
Yeah. And I say,
fantasize about someone liking me.
And I say, my name's Woody. And then she says, is it your real name? And I say, no, it's Woodrow. So actually my real name is Woodrow.
Is your dad a politician?
Aristocrat. Nah, I don't know. My name after my grandfather, which is not a very Jewish thing to do, but they went with it.
Well, you were born in Chi-Town?
I was born in Chicago, lived in the suburbs for my entire young life. And then as you know, college at University of Wisconsin. Loved it.
Cheesehead.
Best place ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Center of the COVID probably now. People just hug each other. All you Badgers are hugging each other. No, is do you miss Chicago? You love, you're in San Francisco. No one's left. It's just you and a couple of syringes walking around.
I know. San Francisco's tough. I am a Midwest guy, you know, through and through. I moved out here in 2010 and, you know, you go to a steakhouse here and they'd say, oh, welcome to XYZ Steakhouse, which there's like two of them in the city because everyone's a vegan. And then they'd say, do you want grass-fed beef or dry-aged beef? And I just said, I just want a steak,
yeah.
You know? So I'm a meat and potatoes guy. My heart, my sports loyalties are still in Chicago, and I think my family will make it back there one day. But you know, the opportunity out here in San Francisco, and I mean, you come out here all the time to raise money, to spend money, to invest money. There's nothing like it. And I came out to San Francisco to compete against the best and the brightest in the world. And that's what excites me about this place.
And you've done it. But don't drag me into this. You know, I don't come to San Francisco, and you always say, Howard, where have you been? So it's four or five years.
I see on Twitter you're here. You know, we used to go get drinks or get Chinese food, but now you're too big time.
Henry Hunan, but you got your recency bias. It's been years. And you've been heads down. So let's start with today. Because I didn't know you bought the domain. You're Hello Extend, but you own Extend.com. So tell people what Extend.com is.
So Extend is an API first, or in English, easy to integrate solution that allows any merchant to offer extended warranties and protection plans on the products they sell. So when you're on Amazon or Best Buy or Walmart or Wayfair, when you're checking out with your products, you get the opportunity to add an extended warranty. And that's been limited today to the top 1% of merchants that are selling either online or offline. The rest of the market has been ignored. So
like Apple. They're just fucking
killing. AppleCare. AppleCare is an extended warranty.
They're laughing at me.
Yeah, the attach rate is crazy. They do billions of dollars a year with it.
Wow.
So basically, if you think about what we're doing, Howard, Stripe was an API first solution to allow any merchant to take payment. Affirm, Bread, Klarna, Afterpay are API first solutions that allow any merchant to check out and finance their purchase. And Extend is an API first solution that allows any merchant to offer extended warranties to the customers. So that's what we're doing. And most importantly, the customer experience that people get today from extended warranties is broken. You never ask someone, did you buy an extended warranty and have a good experience? They look at you cross-eyed. So we said, can we use technology to create an elegant, modern experience around extended warranties and serve customers the right way? And that's what we're doing.
Now, did you get my check? I'm gonna see it, investor, am I not?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I said I had like an hour. It was like a $700 million valuation. I go, wait a minute. It's just, you don't even have an idea yet. I think the most important thing about this is that I got another one wrong. No, I think the most important thing about this is, honestly, you went from fucking a dark moment to like a pivot in your life.
Yes.
And I think that's what I want to talk about. Not that it's, you know, not bragging or fun or good or bad. It's just like, sometimes it's just like you have to shut down. So you're running a Bitcoin fund. I was an LP. I warned you about being a hedge fund guy.
You did.
But I still, and that's why I'm a large undisclosed shareholder in Extend. But you... So hang on. I gotta go check
the cap table again.
Just check it. I wired money to somebody in Chicago, so I hope it was the right thing. So, but you're running a hedge fund in crypto. The bear market hits like an hour after you send docs.
Worst timing ever.
Not important, but because who cares about the worst timing? Is in that you moved on from it. So how do you go? Because you were killing it in the crypto world. I'm like farting around with stock twits and you're calling me every day. I go, you dummy, I'm trading crypto. I'm up 7,000%. Like you were very bullish on crypto.
Yes.
Directionally. Still am. Yeah, of course. So directionally, you're very bullish on Bitcoin, but you messed up your own mojo by starting a hedge fund. And I said, oh, I've been there. You know, it's tough to do this. But you wanted a startup thing going and you start a hedge fund. How do you decide to stop? And then I think there was some time off in between Extend. So walk me through the ups and downs of that.
Yes, of course. I mean, so, you know, so I had just sold my company, or I sold my prior company to DocuSign, right? Amazing business.
Did I say you could bring up a humble? We'll get to that. You can humble brag later.
All right, fine. Well, I was going to make fun of myself for when I sold my stock, but anyway.
We'll get to that too, but let's just stick to the story. Right. Only one right, of us can right. have ADD on this podcast.
Fair enough.
I'll lead you through that.
I drank too many cups of coffee before.
It's okay.
So we start this crypto hedge fund because, you know, I'm super bullish on crypto. And, you know, I think that I know everything and I don't, clearly. And I started with a good buddy named Phil Francis, who's actually out in Arizona. Phil's amazing. He'd been in crypto about the same amount of time as me. One of Phil's attributes is that he won the Junior U.S. Open 3 times in a row. So he broke Tiger Woods' record. In golf, yes.
Fuck, dude, I just joined. Oh, I can't say what I joined. I don't want people to know where to find me, but will you connect us?
For sure.
Yeah, yeah, he's back here right now. I just joined an incredible place.
Yeah, so he was in crypto. I met him through another buddy, David Hovey, who's out in AZ.
What? And no one's hooking me up. All right, keep going.
I know.
The slights continue. Are you writing down the slight? Are you keeping track of the slights?
Always.
Okay, so just another person that doesn't know me in Arizona. Keep going.
We think we know what we're doing in crypto, and we start a crypto hedge fund called 3.0 Capital. We wind up raising about $20 million.
It became 1.0 Capital, correct, if I do the math?
Yeah, basically. Maybe a little. I mean, maybe down 60%. That sounds about right.
So 3.0 Capital. What? Because it was 3.0 because this was
well, Web 3.0. It was 3.0 because like Internet 1.0 was hardware. Right. You know, 2.0 is cloud-based, and 3.0 was going to be distributed systems.
Yep.
And we start this and we go raise money. And, you know, this is 2017, 2018. Like, everyone's so excited about crypto, Bitcoin. We have a meeting. Bitcoin's at 11,000. We have a meeting. Bitcoin's at 14,000. I mean, yeah. It's like,
okay. Hey, we're break even now.
Right. Yes. And, you know, we start this crypto hedge fund and literally we just get kicked in the nuts again and again and again. And, you know, it's the thing with crypto is that it's 24/7, 365. There's no pause. Yeah. At least in the equity markets, you can go to sleep.
Yeah, speak for yourself. But anyways, you're right. Correct. Again, all so, my warnings.
I was scared. I literally would wake up in the morning and I'd be scared to look at my phone because I would see how much money we were down. And, you know, it's one thing, Howard, to lose. And you and I talked about this, you know, we're close friends. And it's one thing to lose your own money on something that you have or had conviction on. It's another thing to lose like your friends and family's monies. That is really tough.
Nothing worse. There's no upside to making your friends money. There's only downside.
It's tough. So, you know, this went on for I'm close to a year, and I was so unhappy. I think for the first time in my life, I was questioning my self-worth, and you know, because it's as an entrepreneur, like you're tied to that, whether you want to be or not, you are. It's like
hedge fund's a startup,
mm-hmm, without a doubt. And I realized that I was no good at managing money. That what I liked to do and what I was good at was building and running companies. Yeah. I mean, sitting in my basement, not talking to anyone, not interacting with people, staring at a screen all day and messaging Phil over Telegram was just like a nightmare for me. And I knew that for my own sanity, I needed to get out.
And it was a great call. So you get out, you write the hard letter. Did people behave well?
Everyone but two people, you know?
I mean, always most a couple people.
Most people were, and it was like the smallest investor, always. To be honest with you. You put in $25,000.
Always which I'm a not small fry.
Yeah, I'm not belittling the $25,000 investment, but I'm just saying that was the person who caused me the most consternation over the decision to wind down the fund.
I told you not to take my son's money. I mean, he's 17. Why are you taking that kid's money? He's not qualified. No, I'm kidding. So anyways, but yes, I have. We all have these stories. But anyway, so a couple people jabbing you into the forehead, rock'em sock'em.
So a couple people are chirping me on it. And again, you know, it just the sigh of relief, right? When I hit send on that letter and I knew I was going to get a wave coming at me and calls and people say, why are you shutting it down? Just ride it out. But listen, I wasn't taking a salary, you know, like there was no 20% here, right? There was no carry because we were down 60%.
Right.
And it was just time. It was time. And I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I knew that I couldn't do that anymore.
Right. I think it was a great decision. I mean, obviously you're still long crypto and so am I, but it was a great decision. How long did it take to get your courage back? I can't remember. It was pretty fast.
It was because, I mean, I remember we talked and we talked about like Rally and I talked to those guys.
Introducing around. Okay. SecFi.
And you actually told me, I remember this. I remember exactly where I was. I was in my bathroom. I wasn't going to the bathroom.
Was it pee or poo?
No. I think I was just looking in the mirror.
Manscaping.
And yes,
you're just looking in the mirror. The guy is looking in the mirror.
Here's
one thing I've never done: looked in the mirror at myself.
We're gonna plug every social leverage company throughout this whole conversation.
Robinhood,
and Narvar, and
Narvar. He's been on, but keep going.
So Coifin. We talked, and you said, and you told me, you're like, you don't want to start another company. You're like, you need to take a break. And do something. Starting companies are hard. right? Mm-hmm. I remember you said this to me. I don't know if you remember the conversation.
And I remember everything. No.
Yeah, and I respect you a ton. And I was like, okay. And as I started talking to other people, and I was talking to some great founders and great CEOs, I couldn't see myself working for someone else.
Correct.
For 20 years, I've run my own companies, and if it wasn't my own, I couldn't see it, because when I do something, I want to work super hard and devote myself to it. So, so what was your question? How long did it take me to?
Yeah. So you're in your bathroom, you're shaving your nuts, you're talking to me, and I'm trying to talk you out of it.
So, I mean, I think it was probably, you know, I think we decided to shut down the fund in November of 2018.
Yeah.
And we launched Extend in February of 2019. So that was fast.
You were fleshing out ideas. I like the idea.
Yeah, 3.5 months. I mean, that's like, I write down hundreds of ideas and then I pressure test them with people. And you know, like I literally, I'll call my mom and I'll be like, hey, what do you think of this? And she poke holes in it and she's like, that's really dumb. And you know, once you get to the point where people that you trust and respect can't poke enough holes in the idea, then it actually may be viable. And that's when I start doing deep dives and doing research to see if I can create a company around it.
And so you come up with Extend and it was a quick raise.
Come up with Extend. And
was there anybody else doing it? Because I like the idea. I was trying to like, I was like, how is this not every, like, so the idea is every product over what dollar amount should be Extend? Because you're doing it with Peloton now. So you got the Peloton, right? You're doing it for Peloton.
We are. Yeah. I mean,
so who do you call on? Peloton. Like, that's such a, I mean, you're a great salesman. So who's doing the calling on these companies?
It's amazing. We have,
because you're a great salesman. That's what you did kind of inside DocuSign. But were you the guy making those calls, or did you quickly hire somebody to do that?
In the beginning, for sure. Myself and my partner, Rohan Shah. I mean, he's a little bit younger than me, but he reminds me so much of myself. He's such a hard worker and he's a great salesman too. And, you know, in the beginning, we're just sort of selling the dream. You know, like, can the product do this? Of course it can. Right? I mean, you don't even have a product built yet. So, you know, we sold the dream and we pressure tested it. And what really let us know that there was an opportunity is we talked to these legacy players in the space, you know, the Square Trades, the AmTrusts, et cetera. And they said, we will not touch a deal that doesn't generate us more than $5 million a year. And I said, so a million dollar a year deal, what are you doing with it? They said, we can't take it. We have hundreds of leads that we can't support. So that was like this crystallization of, okay, there's an opportunity here to aggregate the mid and long tail of the market. And another company that's done that is called Shopify, right? Aggregating the mid and long tail of a market in the e-commerce space. And now they're worth $100 billion or whatever it is.
I'm trying to think that through. Sorry. So how does that aggregation work? Any company that's producing a product over what dollar amount do you think works?
It doesn't matter. Right. We sell extended warranties on $19 headphones. And we sell extended warranties on spark plugs that are $3. And then we sell extended warranties on iRobot vacuum cleaners that are $1,200 and Peloton bikes. So it's really varied. It's across lots of different industries, including consumer electronics, sports and fitness, auto parts, appliances.
So like a Narva, if I sign up for Pelotons, I'm about to cancel it, so you'll have to wire back a few dollars to somebody.
Did you buy an extended warranty when you bought your Peloton? I hope you supported it.
You know what I should have bought? I should have bought a distended delivery, because it's been like every month they just fucking extend it. Not your fault. So you're probably going to have to give back some money if I cancel mine. On the warranty, you go in and sell Peloton. And then when, just like Narbar, when Peloton ships, and I'm sure I got pitched. And I said, fuck Woody, I'm not doing that. And she goes, who's Woody? I go, you'll know. And so she was up selling me on this warranty. She's chasing me around the store. And I said, no, not doing this thing. I know the founder. I can get one cheaper. I'll call the founder. And she just was confused. So I didn't get it. But my question is to you, if I had gotten it, and I think I did, I'm kidding. So I get it. Does it say Extend, like it would say powered by Extend on the receipt?
It does.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Cool.
It does. Yeah. And that's the key thing for us, because we really want to build a consumer facing brand around extended warranties, because there isn't one today. You know, I mean, Affirm, we're big fans of Affirm, right? And, you know, Affirm took what when I was growing up that people called layaway, right? Because that's what it is.
And turned Knut it into knows something. That. He lays away everything. They're Norwegian against the future price of oil.
They turned it into something cool.
I take this abuse every day.
I'm just checking if you're listening. You're doing work or you're doodling.
I'm not.
I know. I'm kidding. So anyway, so like Affirm. So Affirm does not do the warranty though.
No, Affirm just does the consumer point of sale financing. We Extend is doing the warranty.
Oh my God. So, so many people that could buy you. So you built like a really cool platform. Thank God I invested.
You're the largest shareholder.
Oh man. So how many people are you now? What was your last round?
So we just crossed 100 people. We're 20 months old. So it's pretty amazing.
Crazy. I mean, this is
the largest company that I've run. And obviously the fastest growing. And we closed our last round, our Series B. It was a $40 million Series B led by Meritech. And then also PayPal participated along with Great Point Ventures. So some pretty awesome and strategic investors.
And you're doing this through COVID, you prick.
Out of my basement, my friend. No windows. It's attached to the garage. Sometimes when my wife's mad at me, she turns on the car and leaves it on for a little bit just to fuck with me. You know?
That's a little mean. I like her. I like her. At least she doesn't just honk while you're on a Zoom call like Ellen.
Ellen's the best.
Oh, the best. She'll listen to this podcast and just be giggling. We'll be hiking and she'll be like, tunes me out and listens to my podcast. And then halfway down, she goes, you mentioned my name. And in a not nice way, I go, Ellen, it's all love. So it's nice that you shouted her out there. So you did all this. So what is the key lesson that you could pass on?
About building a company or about...
No, you're a master at that. But like, you know, from going the dark to the light.
Gosh. I mean, you know, if it's not working with you and it's bringing you down and it's like affecting your mental health, you gotta shut it down and move
gotta
on.
Shut it down. You gotta surround yourself with people who give you that honest truth. Hopefully, I told you that even though I was losing money. Hopefully I gave you good advice.
No, you did. You were super surprised. I remember I came out to Arizona for a stock twit. I liked it when it was called Linsen Palooza. Now it's Social Leverage Palooza. Yeah. I don't know how you lost that branding.
Because I have no ego, but I need to bring the ego back.
And we talked and it felt so bad. I mean, listen, there were so many friends and family involved in this crypto hedge fund. I mean, there were many times that I got emotional in talking to people because I felt so terrible that I'd lost their money. Now, again, these are people who invested who could afford to lose the money, right?
No one can afford because you know what you can't afford? Being the one to tell them.
I know. That's a good lesson
for all the kids on stock twits to think that, you know, they're smart. The markets are smart. The markets either make you look smart or rip you apart.
They crush you.
They can crush you. And so the real lesson is, like I said, you know, when doing business with your friends, there's really no upside. It's fun when you make money, but no one remembers that. You were supposed to make the money. So hopefully you got some good advice. I think part of my job as like a mentor is to just take it like, I made the decision. I lost the money, not you. And, you know, the people need to pay it forward and you're paying it forward now, 100 employees. I would say a little more productive than trading crypto.
I mean, no doubt. And more enjoyable, right? And more in my wheelhouse. And we have an amazing team. I mean, I'm working with Joe. You met my partner, Joe. We've worked together for 11 years across 5 different companies. And literally we've spent more time together than we have with our families. I think it's funny. It makes him sad. Mike, my head of engineering, I've worked with for 6 years. We have Rob Pfeiffer, who was the chief revenue officer and chief risk officer at Affirm. It's just, you know, there's people from all different parts of my career and my life involved here. And it's super exciting, the path that we're on.
That's cool. So people can't go direct to you. Your job is to be just get yourself out there. Can people just go to Extend if they buy something somewhere else and
it's what the kids are calling B2B2C today.
Ooh, that's a big word. Yeah. I was like trying to spell it out of my head. No, I'm kidding. So B2B2C, which is a newfangled thing, which in the API world, and it's all hustle. Like you got to fake it till you make it. The pipes better work or it won't work. And you're unlocking some massive value. Massive.
Yes. I mean, extended warranties is a $50 billion a year industry today with 99% of the market not being served. We think we can unlock another $50 billion in TAM. And then we also believe that the legacy players are on notice because they're not giving customers this modern, digitally native experience that they deserve. And we can also, we can increase margin and maximize revenue for these large merchants. So we're going to move upstream quickly. I mean, we're already starting to. So that's where we're going.
Cool, cool, cool. So you're an LP with us. Do you still invest on the side, or are you just focused 100%?
Well, a little bit here and there. You know, again, like you said, it's like you want to give back. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, I love supporting other entrepreneurs. And when I write that check, no disrespect to any of the entrepreneurs I've invested in or the funds even, like that money's gone.
Gone.
Anything, any return, if you give me 60 Ring cents or 80 cents, I'm happy. Right? Yeah. It's like I don't have expectations of making multiples on my money. It's just, you know, it's like I love the competition. I love seeing companies built. And if I can be a small part of that and giving a little advice and putting a little bit of money in, that's awesome.
And you did that with DraftKings.
Well, DraftKings, I actually never invested. I mean,
kind of like me with Extend.
Right. But I did.
I'm now a board member of Extend. I've walked myself into the board.
You're chairman.
So how did I refresh me on the, because you offered me to invest in that and I passed on that because I'm on fire here. So what happened?
Yeah. So this is, you know, it's just amazing. Life is just so serendipitous about the people you meet. And, you know, there was a gentleman named Peter Blacklow, who was the president of GSN Games, that I met at a conference in Seattle called Casual Connect. It's not a swingers conference. It's actually a gaming conference.
It wasn't a swingers event because I was going to be mad that I wasn't invited.
And years later when I had, so now can I talk about my past companies without you yelling at me?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. So we had a company called Bring It, which you also passed on.
Yeah.
Passed on that. I pitched you at Henry Hunan.
Because you literally did have a mohawk back then. I was scared of you. I think you were wearing a hockey helmet during the pitch, too.
It was a mullet.
And a mouth guard. Oh, it was a mullet. There's a difference.
So,
and by the way, you were friends with Sonny, and I don't do any deals that Sonny is involved with.
Sonny's the best. I love Sonny.
Did he introduce us?
He did.
Okay. Yep. So we're at Henry Hunan's and you're pitching me Bring It, but I was with Rob. See, I was in like a competitive thing or something.
Yes, the other company, exactly. Yep. But I remember the Robinhood guys were there and they were like six people or five people at the time, right?
Wow.
And we were all at the table. Like, if you could go through that table, it was pretty amazing. If we sat down and thought about who was there.
So Vlad and Baiju were there. Who else was there?
There was another gentleman. I forget. He started. I think he sold his company for like 150 or 200 million. Maybe it was a link shortening company or something.
Maybe Bitly. Okay. And then who else?
Well, me. I got to sit in the corner.
Right.
And then
probably Marquez was there. It was the whole crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the old school crew at Henry Hunan's, drinking tea and having dumplings.
Right.
It was great.
I loved that back then. It was so innocent.
Yeah, it was great. It was fun. It was before Silicon Valley.
It was like 2008, 2009.
It was like 2010, 11.
Okay, sorry.
So anyway, I had a company called Bring It, which was a skill-based gaming company, which I had sold to IGT, International Game Technology, the large public gaming company.
Right.
And I was introduced to Jason Robbins, obviously founder, and I heard him on your show, founder and CEO of DraftKings. And I had previously met Nigel, the founder of FanDuel.
Wow.
Yeah, you'd come to my office because skill-based gaming, there was only like five people doing it at the time, right? You invested in one company, I was another, and then it was these guys.
Yep.
So I met Nigel, and then I met Jason, and I really liked Jason. And, you know, he asked me to come on board and be an advisor, and I actually actually turned him down.
Wow.
Listen to this. So I turned Jason down because I was working on, you know, I just got into IGT. I was busy. I was excited about the opportunity. It was my first Silicon Valley selling in my company. I just said, hey, good luck, but just go beat FanDuel because I like DraftKings guys a lot more than I like this. And maybe about 5 months later, I get a call from a friend of mine who runs a trading firm called BTIG. And I said, this guy, Jason Robbins from DraftKings is coming into town. I think it's right up your alley. You should meet with him. And I go, oh, I remember that guy. And I said, sure, I'll come to the meeting. I went to the meeting. Jason and I hit it off. We went for lunch afterwards. And he asked me to be an advisor again. And I said, yes. Now, DraftKings at the time is 17 people. They haven't even raised their Series A round of funding.
Right.
And they had, I don't know, maybe
were you in Boston or San Fran?
San Francisco, but okay. He had like 6 or 7 months left of runway.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Right. And, you know, listen, I've learned so much. And
I know, we chat and it was just what a roller coaster.
Oh yes. I mean, it's been tremendous. And, the stock was up 10% today. Finally.
I'm in there. But you know, so you wrote it right through as an independent.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so wrote it through as an independent. I was the only independent for a long time, till probably about a year and a half before we went public. And listen, there was a lot that happened at that company, a lot of ups and downs. I'm sure there'll be a book or movie made about it. But, you know, though, Jason and Matt and Paul are some of the smartest people you'll ever meet.
They're
A lot of times you get in a room and someone thinks they're the smartest person in the room and they're not. Jason thinks he's the smartest person in the room. And most times he is the smartest person in the room.
Wow. But
he's also able to change his mind, which is a great quality. So, yeah, those guys are amazing, and they deserve all the success that they have.
So last story. So we back you at Estate Assist, which is after all this, correct? We put together an SPV maybe. We were in between funds. I don't remember.
You did, right. Yeah, it wasn't a SPAC. I thought it was a SPAC.
We should have SPAC'd. I didn't know what a SPAC. Well, I knew what SPACs were. They were running from SPACs. It was an SPV. It was a SPUV. And yes. As pre-SPAC, SPUVs. And so we do a SPUV, a bunch of my buddies invest, and Estate Assist is great, you know, because of LifeLock and everything. So Estate Assist, you kind of bootstrap it, raise a little bit of money.
You raise a little bit of money, Estate Assist.
And you just created a soft, hard landing there. So how'd you pull that off?
Yeah, I mean, that was 11 months. It was fast, right? So basically, it was a digital safe deposit box with permission sharing. So God forbid something happens to me. How does my wife, you know, Gretchen know where my Fidelity, my 401k, copy my will, power attorney, all of this. So, you know, it's a really, I think it's a good idea. I mean, you and Tom have shown me probably six companies in the estate planning space over the years. And just a difficult space because
it's just slow.
And as people, we're inherently lazy, whether we like to believe it or not. And we don't want to think about life insurance. We don't want to think about putting our wills together and other things of that nature. So we built a great product, but we didn't have the funnel of people, right? We tried selling into estate attorneys. We tried selling into private wealth managers, life insurance companies, and we couldn't get a lot of traction, but we had this really awesome product. So we actually had an LOI from LifeLock to acquire us. Because if you think about it, LifeLock is identity theft protection. And we're financial and digital asset protection, you know, another $5 a month, you know, if they get a certain attach rate, it's very accretive to their business. At the same time, we were talking to DocuSign about, you know, a partnership where we could fulfill them with some tech. And they wound up also coming in and giving us an offer after the LifeLock LOI expired. And you know the best decision I ever made was selling to DocuSign and going over to that company.
And not only that, you hustled your way into like the growth team or the head of growth or where did you end up there?
Yeah, I mean I was the head of growth, which no one knows what that means, so that's kind of cool.
I know? That's a title that like Costanza of a company. You're like Costanza.
What do you do? I'm growing the company. But it's again, it's like this obscure Silicon Valley term, and what does it mean for us? For DocuSign, it meant that we built DocuSign payments. So you can actually sign a document and if there's a payment associated with it, you can collect payment inside of that same document. It's actually a pretty cool tool that's getting a lot of traction with the company. And then, you know, we just worked on some other, you know, strategic initiatives and other opportunities, but it was amazing to see where that company's gone.
And so let's just go, we'll end with one more mistake, which again, we all make. So DocuSign who would have thought? I mean, great company, great product, simple product. It's like fucking Kleenex at this point.
It is
obviously why it's where it is. You know, they haven't had to change it. It's like Kleenex.
It's better than like, when's the last time you used HelloSign or CudaSign?
Oh, they win. Terrible. Game, set, match. But you also sold the stock yourself.
Yeah, so two mistakes, right? So first is I left about a year and a half early before vesting on my stock to start.
Didn't invest any of it?
No, I did. Okay. I vested like three quarters of it, but then I left the rest on the table because I wanted to go chase riches in crypto land.
Right.
So all roads lead to the most negative things in my business career lead to being a hedge fund manager. But then, you know, DocuSign went public. And I think it went public at 18 or something. And then it ran up.
How many billion? It was like only 4 or 5 billion. People were like, oh, we can't get above this amount.
I know. And now, I mean, so I wound up selling all my DocuSign stock at $42. And I remember I was home visiting my parents in Chicago and DocuSign went up $43 in one day. And I looked at my mom. I said, DocuSign went up more in one day than I sold the stock for.
But this has happened a lot now. Square's up more in one day. Zillow's up more. You know, it's not a new company. Zillow's up more in the last 2 days than it was. You know what I mean? Like it's bonkers.
It's wild, but you know what? But you know what? It was, you can't look back, and it was a positive outcome, and you can't win them all. I'm fortunate, right? I have a wonderful wife, son, I have my health, I have my parents, I have a great company in Extend, and I'm thankful. A lot of people are struggling. I'm very fortunate. I appreciate it.
No, but I was just going to the point where you have everybody yelling about, they think they understand markets. You were inside, you're head of growth, and you weren't timing the market or saying anything bad about the company. You're just saying, even inside the beast, no one understands how big these cloud companies can be. That was my only point.
Without a doubt.
It's fucking bonkers. Inside the beast. You love the company. You were so excited to take some money off the table, and not because you hated the company. It was like, well, I don't get it. Like, I mean, I'm there. It's nothing wrong, but like this at that price, like, okay. And here we are at what, $200 to $220?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I don't want to do the math.
You know what? I'm going to just text you the price every day. Can I put that on my to-do list? Can you rig up something?
I'm going to take you up the cap table of Extend.
No, don't. So what's your thoughts on crypto now that you have a level head about? You're just directionally long.
Yes. I mean, I used to spin this whole narrative that in my own head that, you know, altcoins and having a closed ecosystem will increase usage and have a point. I don't think any altcoins have a point. I like Ethereum because it could be the underlying operating system of the internet or distributed web, and then Bitcoin as a global store of value, not as a currency. That's what I believe. And I think it's going to overtake gold. I saw governments starting to store some of their global reserves in Bitcoin over time. What I didn't see was the stepping stone, which was public companies doing it. And I think that's super interesting.
So what did I miss? Yeah, because we saw some people doing it. But you don't know if that's a scam or if it's a marketing ploy. So tell me what you think there.
But it could be, right? I mean, it's not like Ice-T blockchain, if you remember that. That was like a real scam. But no, I think this guy, Michael Saylor from MicroStrategy, he truly believes that Bitcoin is more sound money and it's less inflationary than the US dollar. And that's his point, right? And then you saw that Jack Dorsey, who's been a huge advocate for crypto for a long time, now took $50 million, which is a drop in the bucket to them, and put that into their treasury in Bitcoin. So and
no one did it earlier than my man Yoni at eToro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're all copying Yoni, who was doing this in 2011, and now they trade against him. I think people will be surprised at how big that company begets. But you're right, Square, fuck me. Can I say that on my podcast? But like, I can't get past the beard and the behavior by that guy, but like, it's cost me a fortune not being long.
I blame Ryan Gilbert.
The guy won't sell. The guy's long as hell. He hasn't sold a share.
Yeah, for not getting us into Square earlier.
I know. He's ridden the beast forever.
Yep.
So a lot of lessons. This was a lot of fun. Probably not for you, but for me.
Always good to talk to you.
And it's fun to do a podcast, right?
Is this a podcast? I thought we were just talking on the phone.
No. We're recording.
Oh, that's we are?
I think you did well, baby.
I know.
So now Sonny will be mad that he hasn't been on my podcast yet. He was on.
Oh, for sure. You're going to get a text the second this goes live from Sonny, without a doubt.
He is one of the
best. I introduced you guys. I see how it is. I mean, listen, him at BitPay, he's a big shot.
If it wasn't for Sonny, I would be miserable, because he at least is a guy not doing as well as me. So every time I go, I miss something, I go, well, I know Sonny missed it too.
Everyone has that friend you want to call and you want to talk about something good that happens.
Listen to this Sonny story. This is a classic. Got to have him on the show. So we go to the Super Bowl. Sonny is like everywhere. Sonny is like one of my pals. And he's just a loyal mofo, right?
100%.
Yep. So he's always hustling, always working. He's doing great now. So it's fun to talk about this story. So we go to the Super Bowl. Patriots. He comes to Arizona when the Super Bowl is here. Patriots, Giants. And so it's Siegel, Rob Siegel, and I can't remember if you met Rob, and Sonny. Mm-hmm. We go to the game, like, man shake, like, okay, we got the limo. It's pre-Uber. You know, we're in the middle of fucking nowhere for the car, you know, wherever that stadium is, like halfway to LA.
It's
dumbest idea. Nuke that thing. So we go to that crap stadium, and we all have different seats because, you know, we're buying tickets like the day before the game. So we're all like, all right, well, meet back at the limo. And literally, it's like, we're in the middle of nowhere. And I don't gamble. And Rob puts like a $50,000 bet,
oh, wow,
unbeknownst to me, on the game. So he's like, it's nothing to him or whatever the number is, but like, I don't know. And like third quarter of the, or whenever that catch was, he had Patriots and then that Giants made that miracle catch off his helmet or whatever. And Rob realized he's going to lose his bet. Like we were having the best time and then we're having the worst time. And then we leave. He fucking says, let's get in the limo and go. And we left a man down. And that man down at the stadium, I think he's still there, is Sonny. I think he's still running his business from the parking lot at the game. He hasn't been able to get home. He calls and goes, you can't leave a man down. I go, dude, I don't know. I think it was pre-cell phones, but poor Sonny. Can you imagine us doing that to him? And we're still friends.
No, I can't. But he probably made new friends, though. He probably, dude,
made 70 friends in the parking lot.
Exactly. And he's like, Howard, where are you? Meet Bob and Mike and Sarah and Julie.
I mean, you could drop him off anywhere, and he's going to do a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, this was fun. Thanks for coming on. Extend is cool. We'll keep an eye on that, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, my friend. It was great great chatting with you. I'm pumped to spend some time here.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Later.
Kanye. I mean, Knut.
That's me, I guess.
Fun, huh? You know these stories. I mean, you don't know this story, but it's
I want to hang with him next time he comes to town.
Man, he's funny. Well, now he's got a kid, wife, two kids. I mean, I see, you know, now we're all old on Instagram. Oh, look at your kid.
How old is he?
He's probably 40s.
Yeah.
He's younger, but I'm saying excitement for me is this.
Manscaping.
So this was Panic with Friends. We didn't he panicked. That's a pretty good story. I remember getting those letters. I'm like, well, is somebody even there?
He jumped right back up again, didn't he?
It'd be hard to lose this amount of money this quickly.
Yeah.
Anyways, but it was so funny because I was like, dude, you do understand how hard it is to run a hedge fund. I did it for 10 years. You're like,
yeah.
And then the good news is he pivoted. Picked himself up by the bootstraps, and you know, people are going to be mad at you. That's how it works. You're not going to make everybody happy, but you do the right thing and you pay it forward later. That is the lesson. Don't panic. And if you're going to panic before everybody else panics, or panic right away. Don't just wait. Panic. So two a week we do these Panic with Friends. Thanks, Knut. You can go to Spotify or Apple, search my name, Howard Lindzone, or search Knut. And then you'll just get taken to some Norwegian folk music on Spotify. Go to Apple or Google or Spotify, search my name, search Panic with Friends. You'll get an alert twice a week. That's how often we do this show. Talk to founders, venture capitalists, entrepreneurs, traders, investors about panic, making money, losing money, and the stories that they bring. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you, Knut.